Okay.
And the sheets left.
Here we go.
And the sheets left.
No, you have to pass it. This side isn't received here.
Okay, the name of this course is Hamelech V'Hanavi. And at a certain point, those two, even if they were not yet called Melech, a Navi we know. Let's say Moshe is the first Navi. Abraham in this week's Parsha is called a Navi. Right? But in terms of having a leader of Israel who serves as a Melech, we saw last week that the first one is not necessarily Shaul. We saw that it's possibly Moshe. Yahushua seems to have had a din of Melech. Or the Shoftim may have had a din of Melech. So, okay, fair enough. But until a certain point, whoever you would consider to be the Melech figure is also the Navi figure. Consider, please. Who is the Navi in Moshe's generation? Moshe, Avla Naviim, he's also the Melech. Who is the Navi? Let's try to define what a Navi is. Especially for this course, we should know what is the definition of a Navi. It's not prophet. A Ro'eh is a prophet.
A message of God.
A Navi is someone who speaks the message of God. From the Lashon Niv, Borei Niv Sfosayim. A Navi speaks. If you do not speak, you're not a Navi. Or certainly you're not Naviim. You'll be maybe in Ksuvim. So that's why when Aharon was appointed to help Moshe speak to Paro, Hashem says, "Va'aharon ochicha yihye nivi'echa." Aharon will be Moshe's Navi. What does the Avla Navi'im need a Navi for? Because here, Navi means a spokesman. The word Niv means the one who speaks God's message to the people. If that's the case, that person in Yahushua's generation was probably Yahushua. Whenever God had a message to give to the people, he spoke it to Yahushua. Right? So, let's keep moving on through the Shoftim. I don't see a Navi who speaks out God's message to the people, except possibly in the last story where Pinchas is between God and the people. Now that was about to get to that. Only one of the Shoftim is called a prophet. It's the prophetess. It's Devorah is the Navi. So in terms of the getting a message to the people, a few times in Sefer Shoftim we see someone called an Ish Elohim that gives a message to the people. But I don't see any conflict between Melech and Navi, except in one story that I wanted to share with you first, which is this Gemara in Masechet Tanit. I passed it around. I made 30 copies. There should be enough for everybody. Shmuel is considered the first of the Nevi'im after Sefer Shoftim. Right? He's the last Shofet, and he's also a Navi. Then you have other Nevi'im. You have Achia Shilon, you have Nason, a Navi, you have Gad, Hachose, you have... Shmuel is called Haroeh. Okay, does everybody have a Gemara in Tainis going around the table? Everyone have it? If you don't, there are enough copies, please send them back around. Okay, Sheila, you have it? Okay. Okay. It's a famous Gemara, and there's only a little piece of the Gemara that's Nogea to us, but it does appear to be in Chazal the first struggle between the Navi and the Melech. Although the Navi in the story is not known as a Navi, and the Melech in the story is not known as a Melech. But in terms of the Melech being the political leader, and the Navi being God's spokesman to the people, which we can now call a religious leader, that's definitely what the struggle is here, between the political leader and the religious leader. Let's see how that manifests itself in this story. We start off as follows. Follow with me in the Gemara. I put a box around what we'll be studying in a circle around the Tosfos. It says, Shlosha sha'alu shelo kehogen. Three biblical characters made a deal with God, asked something of God, and did not ask well. They should not have made their request. L'shnayim hashivuhu kehogen. Two of them got answered well. Right? Le'echod heshivu shelo kehogan. One did not get answered well. Who got answered well? Ve'eluhain, Eliezer Eved Avraham, Ve'sha'ul ben Kish, Ve'yiftach ha'giladi. What are the stories? Eliezer Eved Avraham, Dichsiv, Vahaya ha'na'ara asher omer eleha atina kadech ve'gomer, Yochal afilu chigeres afilu suma. The man who said, the first God, the first woman who comes to the water and not offers not only for me, but also for my camels, that's the girl who will be for your son, for Avraham's son Yitzchak. This is not a good deal. This may not come out good. What happens if someone not suited for Yitzchak would answer that calling, right? Okay. The Gemara discusses what are some of the worst case scenarios here. But he got answered well. Hashem served him up Rivka. Right? So he got a good answer. He got Rivka. Who's the second one? It was Shaul ben Kish. What did he say? The person who slays that giant and kills Goliath gets to marry my daughter. Similar question. What if someone unsuitable for your daughter would kill Goliath? But he got a good answer. He got done. The third one is, God, the war is not going too well. If you turn things around for me, the first thing that exits my door upon my safe return from this battle with the Ammonites, it says, "Va'yol Hashem va'alisiu Olah." Now, the Gemara mentions in each case the worst case scenario. What if a mamzer would kill Goliath? What if an Eved kills Goliath? What, right? And then it says, "What Yiftach? What if a pig or a dog or a camel would come out? You're going to offer that to God?" Doesn't the Gemara know that worse than that did come out? So Ibn Ezra uses this Gemara to prove that Yiftach's deal with God had two choices. When he said, the thing that comes out of my door will be Kadosh Lashem Va'alisiu Olah, the Vav of Va'alisiu Olah doesn't mean it'll be holy to God and I will offer it up as an offering. No. It'll be holy to God, or I will offer it up as an offering. If it's a human being, that person will be holy unto God. If it's an animal, then I'll offer it up as a sacrifice. So what does it mean to be made up to be holy unto God? Who else said something about her son being holy to God if you give me a son? Shmuel's mother said the same thing. He wasn't brought up as an offering, right? But he was given back as to work and to be serving in the temple, right? With Eli. So Yiftach made this neder, made this vow, and his daughter, whether he slaughtered her on the altar like Rashi says, or he sent her away to live in seclusion to mourn the fact that she never got married, right? Notice the two deals that work out end up getting married to someone. There's another where Kalev says, whoever conquers Kiryat Sefer gets to marry my daughter. Tosfos discusses that. So three that talk about getting married work. The one that talks about not getting married doesn't work. Right? So, last case was Yiftach. Oh, last case, what I just mentioned, was Kalev said, whoever conquers Kiryat Sefer gets to marry my daughter. That sounds just like Shaul. Okay, let's go on. So this is the Tosfos. You see where I circled it? Vahainu? Mm-hmm. Tosfos brings down a medrash that when it comes to Yiftach's vow, there's an easy way out. Which is what?
Matir neder.
Hatir neder. Hataras nedarim. Like we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Kol nidre. Vesari. Just go to a chacham. And make a Taras Nadarim. Let's see what Tosfos deals with this.
What's that story, Rabbi? The last one.
That's where Yiftach...
No,
that's it's okay. We don't need to. Okay. V'hainu deka omar lehu navi li Yisrael. Hatzari ein begilad imrofei ein sham? Is there no bomb in Gilad? Are there no doctors there? So the Gemara darshins this to refer to the city that Yiftach came from was Gilad. Is there no remedy in Gilad for this problem here? There's a simple remedy. Let him go to whom?
Kohen.
To Pinchas. Right?
That's a problem.
So, Klomar Lahatir Nidro. Read the Tosfos with me, please. Klomar, you see it? Behind the Dukamar Lunavi Yisrael, Hatsarian Begilad, Imrofein Shom. Is there no balm? Is there no doctor to matter your nether? To abrogate the vow? Klomar, Lahatir Nidro, Li Yiftach, to fix Yiftach's situation. Right? V'ha have a Pinchas. Pinchas was there, but my lo halach Yiftach, it's lo Lahatir Nidro. Why didn't Yiftach go to Pinchas to get a Torah's Nedarim? Ela mitoch gasus rucho, Omar lo eilech etzlo, shani shofet v'nogid. Ela yavo etzli. He said, I'm the leader. I'm the political leader. I'm the melech. Let him come to me to take care of my problem. Sounds a little stubborn, right?
He needs something.
Why should Pinchas have to go to him? Right? Well, the same way, when a balabas needs something, they say, I'm angry, the rabbi didn't come to take care of what I need. So I say, excuse me, it's you who needs this thing. Right? But that's how people talk. Right? All right, so he says, so Yiftach was stubborn. And he says, even though it was Yiftach who needed something, he said to Pinchas, let Pinchas come to me. Now, after that is being said, then Pinchas should back down and say, what pride do you have in this? What dog do you have in this race? It's not your daughter, right? What did Pinchas say? Upinchas amar, leisi gabai, the ana navi. See the word navi here?
Yeah.
Let him come to me. I'm the navi here. He's the political leader. I'm the religious leader. Let the political leader come to the religious leader. Right? The ana navi va'al yadai tei petura. He needs me for Hataras Nadarim. Let him come to me. Shayisi Shuru Matir. I'll take care of him. I'll matir him. Matir aneder. Upotir osa. And I'll free her from the vow. Ulavasof nen shushnehem. Wow. They were both punished.
What did Pinchas punish?
So Tosfos says that Yiftach nena shenaflue varav kodem misa. Yiftach suffered from a death where his limbs started falling off from him. Where did the Medrash get that from? Because it says, he died and, remember what it says? It says, Vayikover ba'ore Gilad.
The cities of Gilad. So how could they?
He was buried parts in a bunch of different places, all his different body parts. It's very creative. All right, so, and when it comes to Pinchas, oh, it says here, Tosfos writes, Kidichsiv, Ayikover Ba'ari Gilad. You see it?
Mm-hmm.
See the end of the Tosfos?
Wow.
Upinchas ne'nash dichsiv lifnim hayo Hashem imo. It says, in those days, God was with him, means that God stopped being with him. As soon as a religious leader starts playing games like that, you're right, yes, you're right, technically you're right. He should come to you, he needs you. But what ceremony do you have to stand on? The Medrash says, while the two of these two ridiculous men were bragging and going back and forth with their honor, this poor girl suffered.
I don't know whether you accept the poetic justice in most of the judges' stories, but in Yiftach, his mother was a zonah,
yeah.
So she was too open, and his name is Yiftach. In the battle, it said, doesn't say Patachet Pib, it says Patzchad.
Babani Nochi Potsisi Pia as Hashem Loch
Halashim. He opened his mouth too wide, too open a person in general, too ready to fight in the tribes, and therefore the punishment is his daughter's closed. That is the story.
Interesting. It's an interesting irony. Good. So it's you know, the Ramban. Ramban discusses this story and says that it smacks of heresy the way Ibn Ezra explains it, because it implies that to fulfill the vow of being holy unto God, that you have to be closed up and live in seclusion. Shmuel was holy unto God, and he was out in the open. He got married, now the family. In defense of Ibn Ezra, it's not Ibn Ezra saying that this Christian approach to holiness is true. Ibn Ezra is saying that Yiftach made the mistake of thinking it's true, according to this interpretation. You get it? Mm-hmm. This was a raging polemic in the Middle Ages over whether a person reaches a pinnacle of holiness by disappearing into a hermitage and praying and learning all day. Right? Jews never felt that this was the way to go. Okay. All right. So Tosfos ends up by saying that both the Navi and the Melech are at fault and to be punished for this type of behavior. Now we will see in rabbinic literature that this type of stubbornness between a religious leader and a political leader, right, is manifest two other times. And both times it's the Navi who gives in and goes to the political leader. Who are the other two cases?
It's Eliyahu.
Good. Eliyahu and Achav. It's Eliyahu who goes to Achav.
Good.
And Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu. Good. Two for two right away. Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu. Yeshayahu goes to Chizkiyahu. We'll see how Chazal present these cases. Right? And no doubt, the point is that Achav was in great need. He's the one, you know, who's dealing with the terrible famine during his day. He should go out and search for the prophet.
Right?
Like, let's say, like Yeravim ben Nevat. He doesn't go himself, he sends his wife. Right? Remember? Yeravim ben Nevat sends his wife to find out about his son. Okay? All right, so that's our that part of the introduction. Now, please, you can open up the Tanakh or turn to the pages that I gave out to you here. If there are not enough of these pages, you can open up a Tanakh to Shmuel Aleph Perek Chet. Shmuel Aleph Perek Chet. Now, I would submit to you that, and I have proof of this from some various psukim in Tanakh, that Shmuel was the most well-rounded leader of our entire history. He did more as a leader than anyone else. Listen to this pasuk. Moshe v'Aharon b'chohanov u'Shmuel b'korei shemo korim al Hashem v'hu ya'aneim. You hear what I'm saying? Moshe and Aharon are in one hand and Shmuel's in the other hand. Uh-huh. Or in Sefer Yirmiyahu, where Hashem tells Yirmiyahu, stop praying for Bnei Israel. Even if Moshe and Shmuel would get up and pray before me now, I wouldn't listen. So you see, Shmuel is juxtaposed to Moshe. And at one time, juxtaposed to Moshe and Aaron together. Why do I say this? Because when Shmuel emerged as the leader of Israel, the Kohen Gadol, who until then was the religious leader, and his sons died. That would be Eli, Chofni, and Pinchas. There is no Kohanic leadership at this time. The next Kohen Gadol we see is at the very end of Shmuel's life. His name is Eviatar, or Achimelech, right? There is quite some time in between. Achimelech, actually, I should say, serving in Nov. Okay, I'm sure there was a Kohen Gadol. It's just that he's not of note.
Wait a minute.
I'm not saying Shmuel became a Kohen. No, I'm not far from it.
No.
I'm just saying is that there was a dearth of religious leadership. But I think I once told you this in another vein, is that Moshe is our religious leader. Aharon is our spiritual leader. Those are two different things. Now, the difference between the two is that the religious leader is to tell you how to do the mitzvah and is not really interested in how that makes you feel, right? The spiritual leader is more into the pomp, into the ceremony, into the outfits, into the, you know, the public displays. That's what the Kohen Gadol does. His big day is Yom Kippur, right? Okay, so the religious leader is more into the, let's say, the mathematical models of the mitzvahs. How much matzah should you eat? How big should the tefillin be? right? Measure out the maror to make sure it's big enough. I'm not interested in how that makes you feel. Now, to be sure, there is a spiritual component to the mitzvah, which is that you're supposed to feel the redemption from Egypt when you're performing the mitzvahs at the Seder. How you feel is a more spiritual thing. I would call that not a mathematical model, but an aesthetic model. An aesthetic model, you get it? How is this touching you? What's the art of it? What is the feeling? How are you feeling about this? Yes, Moshe?
Do the act
is
a counterbalance? In other words, you can't have one without the other?
Yes. I would, depending, for a chassid, maybe the spiritual point is more important. For a litvisher, for a yeshivish person, maybe the mathematical part. For a brisker, the mathematical part is more important. But they also want to feel the mitzvah. You see, the mitzvah without the feeling, you could say the mitzvah is missing something. The feeling, however, isn't supposed to create the mitzvah. Which biblical character wanted that, does it sound like? Korach, exactly. That's Korach. He says, what do I need the fringes for if the shirt is blue? I feel the blueness. I feel he wants his own autonomy in creating the mitzvah. And what he gets out of the mitzvah. Moshe says that may be very, very, very nice and it enhances your mitzvah. But it's chaotic. Everyone will have their own autonomy to decide how they're blue. For him it's a blue hanky. For him it's a blue sapphire ring. Everyone will do it their own way. And before two generations, no one's good doing the mitzvah of tzitzis or the blue. Right? But this is interesting. In the writings of the Arizal, he says that the first Kohen Gadol when Mashiach comes will be Korach. Which is bizarre. Korach's not even a Kohen, he's a Levi. But he says that, I think what he means to say is that insofar as is the job of the mission of the Kohen Gadol is to imbue us with a spiritual experience of our Judaism. So that's all Korach wanted to do. So there's a Gemara that says that on the brink of Gehenna, but for him it was too late, for his sons it wasn't. On the brink of Gehenna, he said, Moshe emes, v'saraso emes. So if Korach agrees that Moshe's Torah is emes, you get it? Then that may just qualify you as Kohen Gadol material. Okay? On that level. Right? So, I would submit to you that Shmuel was both spiritual leader and religious leader. He was also their political leader. No other. He's the shofet. So he's their politics, right? For better or worse, that's all they have, right? He is also their military leader, right?
He didn't go out to fight.
Yes, he leads them in battle. In fact, that's Shaul's undoing. Because in the nations of the world, it's the military or political leader that he gets the credit for the battles. Shmuel is such a stickler that, Shaul, I do not want you prosecuting this battle until I get there. I think Shmuel purposely came late. He purposely made the situation to be quite precarious. Where Shaul looks around and he says, the Philistines are advancing! And the people have ants in their pants. They want to go already. And I said, well, we're not going until we offer this sacrifice. So at least I offered the sacrifice. You following? So I didn't go and fight like the people wanted. I did as you asked. I offered the sacrifice. But Shmuel said still, Niskalta lo shamartos devar Hashem Elokecha. He said, you acted foolishly. You're king. You should tell them we're not moving until Shmuel comes. And Shaul could have said, I told them that. But they said, and they looked at me and said, but you're king. But you're the king. Right? So he didn't get that. He should have stuck to his guns and say, I know I'm the king. But in Israel, Eile v'recha ve'eile basusim. They fight their battles with kings and political and military leaders. Anachnu v'shem Hashem Elokeinu nezkir. We fight our battles with our prophets. So, Moshe fights, pick up the arm, and people look at the uplifted arms, and they have faith in Hashem, and that makes them have the courage to defeat the enemy. So Shaul lost the opportunity to teach them very early on this powerful message of how we fight our battles with the religious and spiritual leaders. But nonetheless, he is there in the military. He shows up in the battle, the front lines. So look at all that Shmuel is for them. He's the religious leader, political leader. He's their spiritual leader, and he's their military leader. And they potch him right in the face with all of this, and that's where we left off last week. Mm-hmm. It says, Vayizkaptzu. You see it? Perek Ches Pasuk Dalet. Everyone see it? Mm-hmm. It says, Vayizkaptzu Kol Zignei Yisrael. The kol implies like a, you know.
Which verse?
Verse 4. Mm-hmm. Dalet. All the elders just implies like an erbuvia. Erbuvia means like it's a balagan. When you ask for this, you should send a delegation of six elders. You know what I'm saying? This is not something that 42,000 elders should rush into a big stadium and tell him. Of course, exaggerating here, but okay. So all the elders gathered vayavau el Shmuel, and they came to Shmuel. It's Shmuel's place, Haramasa. So they're giving him the kavod. They showed up at his place. This is now in what we call Ramot.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, where Shmuel is buried is between Ramot and Yerushalayim now. Okay, I don't know why on the buses that it's the bus that I take to Shechani's house. They call it Nebe Samuel. For goodness sakes, it's Israel now. Call it Shmuel Anovi. I don't know why they have to call it that. I know the roads on the signs on the road say it in Hebrew, Arabic, and but why do they have to call it? That's what they call it on all the bus in the bus stops. There's this bus stop there.
Because there's a street called Nabi.
Of course there is, but don't call it Nabi Samuel.
It's a mosque built on the supposedly it's Kedem.
Okay, all right. So. For many hundreds of years, the Muslims revered our kvarim in our holy burial places, especially in Iran. But now more recently, they destroy it all. There are some of our prophets have burial places in Iran and Iraq, and they've been molested. Right, there's Daniel, there's Habakkuk, Zechariah, there's all kinds of guys out there. And not to mention Mordechai and Esther. You know, what they did to Kevri Yosef. I mean, but I'm talking back hundreds of years. You know, these places were guarded all the time. There's one Kevri you should really try to visit is the place, you know, who knows if all these people are really buried there. But there's a magnificent, magnificent place. There's a minyan there every day. For Yisro's Kevin, Moshe's father-in-law in the north of Israel. It's magnificent. It's I'm telling you, it's bigger than Meir Balhanes. It's bigger than
really.
It's bigger than Yonas and Ben Uziel. It's magnificent, and it's kept somewhere in the north of Israel. I was there just once, and there was a minion there. It's so well. It's heavily lit, and it's the couches. And you have to go see if you ever go on one of these trips to, you know, to the Makom, call it the holy places. Okay, so let's go on. So v'yamurei lav, and they told him, Hinei atoza kanta uvanecha lohachu b'drachecha. So this is a two problems here, and this I think we did last week, is that you're old, because if you were younger we'd ask you to be king, but you're too old. How many years do you have left to live? According to the Seder Olam, he only lived 2 more years. But
how old was he?
So, you know, Chazal say he died at 52, but which would make him 50 here. But so he, you know, you can have a very old 50, you can have a very young 70. But Bravanel is very convincing when he says that all the stories of Shaul until David became king is more like 20 years, which means that they thought he was old. Okay. And he still lived another 20 years. But you know what? Just because you're old doesn't mean that would be our game breaker. We would still ask you to be king if your sons were good. But you don't have any good sons. So for you to rule just a few years and give over your new kingdom to these shlubs, right? To these rogues, that's not an option for us. So we're asking you, Ata, simo lanu melech l'shofteinu k'chol ha'goyim. Now give us, place upon us a king like all the nations. And Shmuel's reaction is not measured. It is not calm, like Gidon's. Remember we looked at Gidon's reaction last week when they asked him to be king. See, they didn't ask Shmuel to be king. They asked Shmuel to get them a king. They asked Gidon, you be our king and your son be our king. And Gidon very calmly responded, no, I'm not your king. My son is not your king. God is your king. So Gidon turned them down very quickly. Shmuel was in no position to say no. God is your king. He couldn't say something like, can he say no? Then why wouldn't they just open up a Sefer Devarim and show him the Pesukim? It says, Som tesim alecha melech yichol, even in fact, they use a similar lashon. Right? So that makes some commentaries say that he got angry because it was somewhat personal. Right? So on this, I would like to underlined four words. Mm-hmm. Ata with one, Lana with two, L'shavteinu with three, and Kechol Hagoyim with four, right? Mm-hmm. So look first at the words Kechol Hagoyim. The Gemara in Masechah Sanhedrin says that that's what angered him. What do you want a king to be like all the Goyim? What does a Goyish king do for them? He goes out to battle with that for them, and I'm not even sure if that's what he does, but it's all pomp and it's all ceremony and it's all. What do you want to be like the nations? Okay, yes, you do need a king at some point, but not just to be like the nations. Okay, Abravanel says that this is a nice drash, but it says in the Torah, Ki tavo el aretz, asher Hashem elokecha nosein lecha, v'shaptava v'rishta, v'amarta osim ala melech kechol ha'goyim, asher svivosai. I'd like to have a king just like all the other nations around me. They have kings, it's time for me to have a king. All right, so the Gemara answered, the reason why that's written in the Torah is because God anticipated that they would ask it that way. All right, but, okay, I'm moving to a different one. But can you look at Pasuk Vav and tell me why in the pshat of Pasuk Vav this is not really a good explanation of what angered Shmuel? Look, read it. It says, if that's what angered him, the Pasuk Vav should have repeated that. Pasuk Vav tells us what angered him. That they said, give us a king l'shofteinu. That's the three lines. And this branches off into two categories. One is Ramban, and one is the Ran. Ramban was the Rebbe, the Ran was the Talmud. They both agree that the shofteinu in the pshat is what angers Shmuel. Because it says so. It says it angered Shmuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. What's wrong with that?
He's
the shofet. He's the judge.
He's still alive.
You have to smooch it in his face, right? You have to so fashter him. It's bad enough that you're not asking him. So you're going to tell him, excuse me, Mr. Shofet, appoint a king to replace you as shofet, among all the other things that we want him to do, right? So it was l'shofteinu that angered Shmuel, because, after all, he's a human being. He's the shofet. He's a big patch in the face. So Ramban's Talmud, Ramban writes, doesn't have a parish to Shmuel that we have, Ramban writes this in the bracha of Yehuda in Parshas Vayechi. Okay? So the student, or the Ran, says that what angered him is that to say give us a king to be our judge is a mixture of two branches of government that should not mix. Every time we see a king get off into being a judge, not just one possible case, one case at a time, but when a king starts to hand out justice, it does not work well. There are judges who have their, that's their job. That's their training. You're the executive branch, that's the judiciary branch. Don't mix the two. To say I want the king to be our judge is acting like Hammurabi. Hammurabi is an illegitimate nation as far as our political situation, because Hammurabi, in his introduction to his law code, says that I am the God who created my people, who created the world, who created this law code, and the people worship me. That is not our way. Here he's becoming divine, because when you mix executive with judiciary, that may just be the next step. And then you're the lawgiver also. Right? Yes, your question.
Was Nimrod a judge and a king?
So I don't know about Nimrod. I don't see him being a judge. I don't see anything that indicates. But I will tell you this. In that time period, that time period of Hammurabi, Nimrod, the kings tended to be judges. The kings tended to decide decide the case. Yes.
Don't we praise Shlomo for making the decision between the two?
So that's where I was going exactly. I'm happy you mentioned that.
Is what
the story ends by saying everybody knew how wise Shlomo was. So good, wise is very, very good and important trait for a king. However, there is a medrash that says that the moment that Shlomo said, "Cut the baby in half," to a gasping audience,
the nation,
a heavenly voice came out and said, "Cut the nation in half." There's no way anybody should make people think that even if, of course, you didn't mean to. It is an abuse of power, and it is an abuse that a king is more likely to take than anybody else, because the king is used to saying they have to listen to me. You know, the king is not allowed to the Mishnah in Sechas Sanhedrin says the king can't judge, because then other people won't want to disagree with him, and he'll start judging alone.
The whole Talmud, isn't that based on Rabbi Yehuda who claims Davidic, and yet?
Okay, but Yehuda HaNasi does not have a
title.
It doesn't have a title of Melech. It may be true that when he died, the people tore Kriya as if though the king died, but he does not have kingly rights of that sort. None of the heads of the Sanhedrin had that. It's more of a teaching role and a legislative role of sorts. So
what does the Mishnah say in the Sanhedrin?
That a king may not be a judge.
Yeah.
Lo dan ve lo dan eno sof. So I would say another case where David acts as judge in a similar situation, where Mephibosheth and Tziva, does the story sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Mephibosheth and Tziva are sort of about the inheritance of Shaul HaMelech. Tziva, Mephibosheth was Shaul's grandson, and David bequeathed to him the whole property that King Saul had in what today is Givat Shaul. And Mephibosheth was wrongfully accused by Tziva of siding, that Tziva accused Mephibosheth of siding with Avshalom. David accepted that. It's an interesting morality play that on Shabbos Daf Nun Vav, the Gemara goes through hoops to prove that David did not sin with Bathsheba, but admits that he did sin in accepting the Lashon Hara from Tziva. Hmm. Right? Adultery and murder, we're going to clear you. Lashon Hara, no. Right? You speak like you accept that kind of Lashon Hara, we have no excuse for you. We can find no excuse for you. It sounds like the morality of Achav. All the Avodah Zarah and the Znus and everything else he brought into Israel, all right, he's winning battles. He takes that vineyard from that Navot, finished. Haratzachta v'gam Yerashta, oh, game over. So here is the Ran's interpretation, is that the repetition. It angered Shmuel that they said, "Give us a king, l'shofteinu." Right? Is that by announcing that we want our king to be the judge, this is you're acting like the Goyim. You didn't have to repeat Kichol HaGoyim. That's what they do. Their king has such absolute power. Right? Incidentally, what was David's psak halacha to Mephibosheth and Siva?
Split the field.
Okay, does that sound familiar to you? Yuma Dav Chav Beis, the Gemara says, just so cavalier, just say, split the field. Yeah, okay, you want to, you take it hard, split. What's the matter with you?
This is
a Yerusha. And you didn't give it much thought. Split the field. Right? So the heavenly voice comes out and says, okay, split the kingdom. It's as if though it creates some kind of a destiny. David says split the kingdom. Shlomo says split the child. And then when Rechavam is asked, Rechavam, listen, you're king over a vast kingdom. Your father built many, many edifices. Go easy on us. It was probably a delegation of Republicans that went to him and said, lower taxes and we'll stay loyal to you, right? So Rechavam took advice from the elders and then the little kids. And he took the advice of the Eladim, it says, the kids he grew up with. And he stood firm with them. He said, no one talks to a monarch this way. You get it? It's like a destiny. Once the two generations before took it upon themselves to speak so firmly about the rights that the king has and is to be a judge. So an additional interesting point is that on the very rare occasion, it's not happening this year, where Shabbos Chanukah does not coincide with Parshas Miketz. It happens every 25, 30 years. Shabbos Chanukah is usually, most often, Miketz. But in the very rare case where Shabbos Chanukah starts on a Friday, right before Vayeshev, and it hits Vayeshev, and then it ends on Thursday night is the last candle. Chanukah officially ends just as you're getting into Shabbos. And then the next day is Miketz without Chanukah. When that happens, you don't remember the Haftorah when that happens because it's so rare. But when that does happen, the Haftorah you read is Shlomo cutting that, offering to cut that baby in half. Right? So on the face of it, all the books on Haftorah say, what's the connection? On the face of it, they both involve a dream.
Which
parasha? It's Miketz. Miketz. By Miketz in time in Power of Dreams, and that's how Yosef becomes. Right. Mm-hmm. So on the face of it, I do have a connection. They both involve a dream. But wait, there are lots of stories in the Nevi'im with dreams. Why not? The Gidon story has a dream, right? There are other stories with dreams. That's all it is, right? Rather, the dream, okay, dream, but there's something much more going on here. When Yaakov is sitting on his deathbed and deciding which son of his is going to rule over the others, the choice is so eminently obvious it should never have even been a thought in his mind. Who should it be?
I mean, we'd think Yosef.
Yosef!
Yehuda.
Yosef, he is the ruler. He's the mashpir, he's the ruler. He is the one who rose above the others. Of course he's king. He's the only one who has already demonstrated and exhibited kingly behavior. Right? So what makes Yaakov go against the obvious king? They're all bowing to him. He saved all of us. Of course he should be king. And he's also my favorite. So what makes Yaakov on his deathbed reject Yosef? Right? Now Yosef does become the king of the northern tribes, so that's why we have two Mashiachs, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, fine. But when Yaakov rejects Yosef for Yehuda, the commentaries say, why? What is it? So the answer that the connection to the Haftorah is that Yosef absolutely manifests the behavior of the king, but in one negative way. He goes too far. We assume Yaakov knows this, but he does what Shlomo does. He goes too far. When he heard the brothers say, I told you, when he heard Reuven tell them, I told you you shouldn't sin with the boy, I told you, Now look, this is happening to us because of that. Then he should have given up right there. Or he should have sent a letter to his father. Don't let the brothers know. You still want to rehabilitate them? Fine. But get a letter to your father. Right? Make a secret meeting. You have everything at your disposal. And remember, you can look for good excuses, and I want to excuse Yosef. Yosef saves Bereishis. Not just the world. But there is... Look, Yosef has some atoning to do too. He brought some of the scorn upon himself. Be that as it may, Yosef overplays his political hand, according to this interpretation, as did Shlomo. The Haftorah of Miketz is not connected to Paro's dream. The Haftorah of Miketz is connected to what Yosef put his brothers through. Not to mention his father. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. So that's the Shoftedu. Now, just for a cute little two additional interpretations. So I just did the Kichol HaGoyim with four lines, the Shoftedu with three lines. Now look at the two words with two lines and one line. The Rambam says that the word atah shows a real problem that which Shmuel was angry with. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim says that the word atah on the last page.
It means we won't wait till you die.
It means, we want it now. Mm-hmm. Come on, wait a second. We appointed an assistant rabbi here and spent 4-6 months looking for a candidate. A king over the whole nation, the first king, of course, a king, and you need a campaign, you need a... Right, he's being chosen by an oracle from God, right? But it's to say we want it now. Atah, we need it right now, because the Ammonites are threatening us. Right?
Which king are they referring to, Rabbi?
Well, this king now is Shaul. Okay, we want him now. Right? That's what Shmuel finds difficult. Now, this word Sima Lanu, this is amazing. It's the Kli Yikar. The Kli Yikar says that when Bnei Yisrael when it says in the pasuk that Bnei Yisrael ask for a king, it says when you come to the land and you inherit it and you reside in it, and you say I would like to have a king like all the nations. It's very unusual. What other mitzvah starts off this way? And when you're free in your land, and you're eating a meal the night that I took you out of Egypt, and you say, I'd like to have a physical manifestation of the remembrance from Egypt. I think I'm going to make a Seder. But what other mitzvahs are like this? Right? You know what I'm saying? And when you come to the land, and you say, I'd like to make a remembrance of Egypt. Okay, put tefillin on your hand. What kind of mitzvahs are there? That it should say, when you come to the land, you inherit and you sit in it and reside in it, and you say, I'd like to have a king like everybody else. Then it says, Som tosim alecha melech. So it means it's only a mitzvah when you need it. So Shmuel is angry. You don't need it now. This is the first time in 500 years you don't need a king. Right? Well, actually, not so fast. What is the situation in Sefer Shoftim they're trying to avoid by having a king?
Each of the tribes fighting separately.
When the Shofet dies, the same old problems start over again. Think and say for Shoftim that no one Shofet unites the people. No, Gidon almost goes to battle with Ephraim. Yiftach ends up going to battle with Ephraim. Right? Devorah complains that all the bunch of tribes didn't come to join in the war effort. Shimshon was even handed in by Yehuda, right? No one shofet unites the whole nation, and it becomes so fractious that at the end, Shevet Binyamin is almost wiped out. Mm-hmm. Right? And what do they do? Remember the story with Pilegesh Begiver? If you don't know the story, don't get crazy. Remember he cuts his concubine into 12 pieces and he sends one piece into each part of the land as a sign of how we've become 12 different nations. That's a specific, you know, they wiped out all of Binyamin except for 400 men. So remember they went to a particular city called Yavesh Gilad. Mm-hmm. Yavesh Gilad. In order to find 400 women for these 400 men of Binyamin to marry. Right? Now fast forward to our story, because right after they asked for the king, right? Remember, which tribe is this king from?
Binyamin.
So that means somewhere on a woman's side in Shaul's family, there is someone from Yavesh Gilad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're from Shevet Binyamin,
for the other tribes.
If you're from Shevet Binyamin,
yeah,
you have you're descended from the women of Yavesh Gilad, mm-hmm, right? And a man from your father on, right, on Binyamin. Mm-hmm. So as soon as Shaul becomes king, the people of Ammon threaten the city of Yavesh Gilad. If you look at the map, Yavesh Gilad is far from Ammon. Uh-huh. I know what Ammon wanted to do. Ammon wanted them to threaten. Some kind of threat to a Jewish community somewhere to test this new king. And Shaul wants to help Yavesh Gilad because that's his people. It's his homeboys, right? That's his hometown, right? So he calls together the elders of Israel to raise an army to fight on behalf of Yavesh Gilad. No one's home. No one wants to fight. Huh. It's Sefer Shoftim all over again. You can't raise an army. So what does he do? How does he heal?
He cuts up an ox
into 12 pieces and sends a piece to each tribe and says, Kochi yaseh lo ish asher, this is what we'll do to every farmer, every owner of animals in Israel if I don't see big numbers coming out. Right? Over 350,000 people came. Right? So do you see like it's healing? It's healing through Yavesh Gilad. It's healing through cutting something up to 12 that showed how fractious we were in Shoftim, and now we're trying to fix Sefer Shoftim with this new king. Right? So when it says in the Gemara, Som tosim alecha melech shetehe imaso alecha, put a king over you so that you fear him, it's because it says Som tosim alecha. You get it? He's sitting like he's on your shoulders. He's on you. Som to sim alecha. Here they didn't say. They said sima. They should have said aleinu. Instead they just said lanu. In other words, they wanted the ceremony and the pomp. They didn't want the onus to be on them, to have the yiras shemayim that's necessary. And that's why the last, at the end of Sefer Shoftim, four times it says, B'yamim ha'im ein melech b'Yisrael. Everyone did whatever they damn pleased. Okay? Okay, so we're still in sort of the introductory phase. Next week we will start to look at some Shaul-Shmuel interactions. Some Shaul-Shmuel interactions. Okay? I think we're going to have to have Marv upstairs.
Everyone is needed to Marv upstairs.
Thank you.